Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now though, we've been hearing and seeing this morning that Donald Trump left the G7 meeting early to focus on the ongoing bombing between Israel and Iran. Well, that conflict is already spreading fears of instability in the region and leading to a spike in oil prices. Well, for more on this, we're joined in the studio by the Minister of State for Foreign Affairs, Trade and Defence and Fianna Fáil Meathies TD, Thomas Byrne. Good morning.
Good morning, Claire.
Donald Trump saying early this morning everyone should evacuate Tehran. That's 14 million people if you include the wider suburbs. The roads are clogged, petrol is in short supply. Are the Irish embassy staff in Tehran heeding that warning now?
Well, I wasn't talking to them or their superiors this morning, but speaking to ministry officials last night before President Trump said that. Clearly we're very concerned. We have about up to 30 Irish people there in total. There's a small number of people in our embassy as well who do fantastic work. But there are no flights out of Iran. So it's not easy to get in or out of the country at the moment. Nobody would want to go. The advice is not to go, but it's very hard to get out. So that is certainly a challenge for us at the moment. But we're certainly keeping up to date on developments with extreme concern. And our first in our thoughts are diplomatic staff and those Irish people, that small amount of Irish people who've been there. And there's very few Irish people who were just a short time there. Most of them are there a long time. And they're well settled.
But there's 30 there in total.
Yeah.
And people might remember back to Afghanistan. We used the French, didn't we? We got help from the French to get people out. Is there anything of that nature underway or planned?
Well, there may well be discussions, but there's no flights whatsoever in and out of the country at the moment. So like nobody would be flying in or out of Iran at the moment unless it's a ceasefire. And
that's so you can't get those people out.
I can't say that, and I'm not on that file. That's dealt with not in the European Affairs section of the department, so I'm not absolutely up to date with that. But what I would say is there are no planes going in and out. We will remain in constant contact, of course, with our European colleagues. There is a meeting of foreign affairs ministers as we speak. It's a video conference where people are essentially setting out their positions on it, but I have no doubt that this issue will arise. But what we want and is a ceasefire, and that's the only thing that can work for the safety of our citizens and the safety of our diplomatic staff as well.
So what about Irish people in Israel then? I mean, given that the threat is there for those people too, I mean, obviously it's probably less of a threat given that this has been a relatively one-sided conflict because they have the Iron Dome for protection. But is that an issue as well, getting Irish people out of Israel?
Well, yes, and it's certainly the advice not to go there at the moment is very strong advice. And again, we have diplomatic staff in Tel Aviv. We have diplomatic staff in Ramallah as well, in Palestine. It's a very difficult situation for them. There's no question about it, and it is dangerous. So we're going to keep in touch with our citizens on the ground. If they obviously want to make themselves known to the embassy, if they haven't done so already, they should do that. But these situations are very difficult and they're extremely fast moving as well. But we are in touch with our European colleagues and we are in touch with our embassy constantly about this issue as well.
Right. Now, you spoke about the need for a ceasefire and that EU meeting we know is underway this morning. I mean, the United States, we saw Donald Trump leave the G7 earlier today and, as I said, warning people to get out. You could argue that there has been a distinct lack of US leadership in calling for a ceasefire here. Can the EU credibly fill that vacuum?
Well, to be fair, there was a G7 statement which called for a ceasefire, and that was signed up to by America as well. There has also been a unified EU statement on it as well in terms of calling for a ceasefire. There's only so much the EU and the United States can do. We will put on maximum pressure because we don't want this instability. Nobody wants this. Everybody knows that Iran would be very, very dangerous with nuclear weapons, but no one wants this level of instability. We had an agreement before with Iran in terms of, you know, their nuclear program. Ireland was actually, as when we were on the Security Council, was dealing with that particular file over that 2-year period. And that actually succeeded, that agreement. And it does show that agreements and diplomacy can succeed. And that's where I think, and the Irish government, and certainly I think the vast majority of Europeans think, we should be, is diplomacy and is agreement.
On a local front, are you concerned about oil prices, petrol, diesel, home heating, oil? And the prediction is that they will be impacted by this.
They already are impacted by this. There's no question about it. And we don't produce any oil ourselves. So we're entirely dependent on that market. And any instability there has an immediate, almost immediate impact on prices back home. And there are further threats, such as blockades of the Strait of Hormuz, etc., etc., that would have a very difficult impact. And that's why we have to put as much pressure as possible, because A, it's the right thing to do, but B, these conflicts, while we may not see, you know, war on this side of Europe or in Europe because of this, we will see huge impacts on our citizens. And we're deeply aware of that and working really, really hard to prevent any further instability from occurring.
But will there be help for people who are having to pay those prices?
I mean, this is a fast-moving situation. I think you've seen what the government has done in the past in relation to high energy prices. And the government, I think, has really given good answers when that has been appropriate. But we are literally 3 days into this particular crisis at a time when oil prices had been going down. There was more oil coming onto the world market. This is obviously a major shock to that. But let's see how this plays out over the next couple of days.
The government was really quick after government formation to rule out any energy credits in the upcoming budget. You may have to backtrack on that now.
Well, look, I don't think it's right to speculate in the budget on the basis of, you know, 4 days of serious instability where our citizens are at risk in Iran and Israel and Palestine. I think we need to analyse the situation, see what can be done. I think every country in the world, apart from the oil producers, has an interest in making sure that oil prices are kept low, that consumers can afford oil. No government wants prices to go up. And I think that that is certainly an incentive for the likes of the United States and indeed the European Union to speak with the strongest voice possible to return to stability.
Right.
That's the way to deal with this, rather than sort of, you know, a few days into this, start talking about the Irish budget.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll have to see. But there was a very definitive statement from the government on energy credits, which, you know, things change very rapidly, as we've seen in the last week. I want to talk to you as well about that other deadline that's coming, the 9th of July, and the tariffs. We know negotiations are underway with the United States. There's talk now of 10% perhaps being the tariff rate that might be accepted. Would you be in favour of that, of accepting 10%?
Well, we're not in favour of any tariffs, but they've been imposed by the United States, and there are discussions at the moment.
But the reports yesterday were, in Germany certainly, that there's a willingness now at an EU level to accept 10% as opposed to the 0 for 0 that we had been looking for.
What I'd say is that the United States seem to have a position that 10% is a baseline tariff to the general economy. That's what they want to do. They've obviously put higher tariffs than that, and the threat of higher tariffs than that on us as part of a negotiation. The negotiations are ongoing. There is, I would say, intensive discussions, including at the G7 and before and after that, between the EU and the US, and we've been kept fully informed of that. In addition, the tonnage that has been engaged with US counterparts as well at various points in this process. And that negotiation, I would say, overall is going reasonably well, but we're not there yet by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever is agreed on the American side obviously has to go to President Trump. But the Americans have made it clear, publicly at least, and again, this is all part of a negotiation, this is not necessarily the final position, that there may well be a baseline tariff of 10%, except perhaps in certain sectors. But it's a negotiation and we're not there yet. But I do think that the conversation between the US and the EU is warm at the moment, is productive at the moment.
Right. But do you know why Ursula von der Leyen hasn't become personally involved and met Donald Trump? And Jean-Claude Juncker, the former EU commissioner, has criticised that and says she should have been over there. Why hasn't that happened yet?
Perhaps. I didn't see that particular criticism. She was talking to Donald Trump at the G7 just yesterday, as I understand it, about trade, actually. So she was talking to him. Maris Sefcovic is the trade commissioner, and he has been dealing directly with Howard Lutnick and the US trade representative as well. And I think that is having a productive impact. But there's no doubt in these negotiations all the time that if the subordinates, as in Sefcovic's level, can't get to an agreement, that it does go to leaders. And that's the general way of these negotiations at international level.
Keep her in reserve, is what you're
saying.
That's
the way it happens. But she has been talking to Donald Trump, let's be clear about that, because she was talking to him yesterday at the G7.
Well, I know, but no formal meeting, and certainly no Oval Office meeting, which some might have expected.
Some may have expected. That's a matter for President Trump.
But Peter Mandelson, when he was doing the deal with President Trump and his representatives for the UK, do you remember when that deal was being announced initially? actually, Peter Mandelson made a suggestion that Donald Trump had put something on the table at the very last minute when everything else had been agreed and they thought they were at the finish line. Trump came in with something else. That's what you have to watch for here, isn't it?
I already said that, yeah. Like whatever's agreed between the negotiators will have to go to President Trump and indeed to the member states of the European Union. That's how it works on our side. So like that's an unpredictability, and we've seen that unpredictability. I think we've taken the right approach over the last number of months, is that we don't overreact to every unpredictability, but try to build up a trust and a rapport with the American side, and to make sure that they're aware that this is, you know, of huge benefit to them to have this type of stability there, and the tariffs are not good for them.
Okay, did your department intervene with the Egyptian authorities to have Paul Murphy, the TD, released from police custody?
Well, what I would say on that is that, you know, any citizen who seeks consular advice gets consular advice, and that I'm not going to talk about anyone's individual case. But undoubtedly, there was a meeting between the ambassador and Paul Murphy, and contact between the ambassador and minister, the Tánaiste, Simon Harris. So undoubtedly, conversations happened in the course of that.
So the Irish ambassador met Paul Murphy.
Well, certainly, that's my understanding on Sunday afternoon, yeah. That's my understanding, yeah.
Okay, so we can take it then that there was some intervention or at least we always give
consular assistance, and consular assistance is precisely termed. It's not always everything that maybe the citizen would want us to do, but any citizen in that situation will always get the full attention from our ambassadors, and we do have an ambassador in Egypt as well.
I wanted to ask you about comments from Sean O'Driscoll, who is the chair of the ESRI and somebody who is well respected in business. He says we're facing a national emergency on infrastructure, energy, water and transport. Is he right?
Well, I think someone like him has to be taken seriously. I think someone has to be listened to, somebody who's got huge experience in a global Irish business. He's chairing now this task force that Minister Chambers has launched. I think that's a really, really important body of experts. How do we unlock infrastructure? So, yeah, I think we should listen to him really, really carefully.
But he's saying you're going to have to make some really difficult and possibly unpopular decisions now and do it straight away in order to address this.
Yeah, I don't disagree with him, and I would certainly listen to him really, really carefully. I absolutely would. And that's why Minister Chambers has put people like him on this board, on this task force, to advise the government, because we've got to make sure we get everything right. Mm-hmm. And on occasion, there's been maybe at times maybe pressure, political pressure that sometimes is just temporary.
Are you talking about the Greens?
No, that's a political perspective, and they're entitled to that, and they're not in government now. But sometimes we can all react to particular projects and maybe take a particular view on them.
What are you thinking about when you say that?
Well, I'm thinking of, I can think of lots of projects. There are roads projects that are objected to. There are trains projects that are objected to. In my own constituency, we objected to the Northside Interconnector. Well, in that case, we wanted it underground. There are objections to water being extracted from the Shannon. There's a lot of these things are happening. And I think that it's very, very important that when we're making these decisions that we do look to the national interest, because I think that is what's most important in the long term, to make sure that we can build the infrastructure that this country needs, to make sure that we're not only providing housing, for which water is an absolutely essential resource, of course.
But in saying that, if you're to follow this logic, you're going to have to say to objectors, I'm sorry, I know that you're upset about this, but this is for the national good and we're going ahead.
May well be, but again, like everything else, there is always a process. So there will never be a situation where objectors or people who don't agree with something don't have their voice heard. That will always happen. Mm-hmm. And I think the key is to make sure the rules are as clear and as fair as possible, and the processes are as fair as possible. And we have seen, for example, when on board Panala, significant changes now afoot in relation to that, in relation to the planning system, to try and get decisions taken much more quickly in order that we can deliver the infrastructure that is absolutely essential for our economic growth and societal development.
In the medium term, though, you've been told this as well, that you're going to need to make choices between housing and AI data centres. I mean, that came from the Secretary General of the Department of the Environment.
I think the Secretary General, I don't accept that, no. We want to make sure that we're at the forefront of AI, of course, because that's really, really important for our tech sector, for unemployment, but also that we're going to provide housing. And that will require a lot of energy. There's no question about that. And we're going to have to make sure that we do that by making sure that we're developing new sources of energy, such as wind connection, and making sure that that's connected into the grid. But also the interconnector with France. There's a European budget negotiation coming up now, and I think there's huge opportunity there to get a line of sight in terms of funding for massive infrastructural developments that will connect us to the continent, particularly for energy, in order to make sure that we have the energy supplies to fulfil both our housing needs and our general economic needs as well.
So you think you can do both?
Look, I think that we have to do as much as we can. We're an island country. We have very little in the way of natural resources that would sustain the economy here. We have to be connected to the world. We have to make sure we're producing as much energy as we can, notwithstanding that we don't have oil and very much gas off our coast. So we're going to have to do it, and we're going to have to make these tough decisions that Sean O'Driscoll has spoken about. I know that Jack Chambers, certainly when he speaks about these issues, and I was talking to him yesterday about some of these issues, he's very, very passionate about it. I think he's right to be, because we do need, no one will thank us in 10 years' time if we haven't made these decisions, even if they're difficult at the time.
Okay, Thomas Byrne, we'll leave it there, but thanks for coming in. Thomas Byrne there, Minister of State for Foreign Affairs, Trade and Defence.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.